Grease trails and fuel stains on the floor. I'd say the National Guard stirred their wags down here. Lots of Hummers, a few trucks, and a couple of APC wags. Bradley's from the tire tracks. The soldiers loaded them with the blasters from storage and drove away.
To where?
Where did all the troops from the redoubts go? Nobody knows.
And they just tossed the trash down here as they unpacked their weapons. Must have been in a hell of a rush to leave the area.
Which was lucky for us. We found quite a few working weapons accidentally disposed of in the trash.
And some that are worth shit. Want the bad news first?
Nothing good?
Some. We have an M60 with no ammo, 100 rounds of 30mm shells, and no blaster they'll fit. Got 10 blocks of 4.5mm caseless ammo, which I wouldn't give as a gift to a sticky. There's 2 shotguns with bent barrels, 4 M16 long blasters with dented receivers, 6 Stinger-guided missiles without a launcher tube or radar box, not that the circuits would have worked anyway after the EMP of the nuke.
None of them smiled at the info.
Now the good news. We got a flamethrower with 90 seconds of fuel, 6 M16 M203 combo blasters, 9 usable clips, and 1,000 rounds of ammo, plus 20 assorted shells for the 40mm launchers. 10 Grens, 2 of them smoke charges, 1 Claymore landmine with a broken timer, but I can jury-rig something for that, 100 timing pencils, a 4-shot law rocket with 1 live round, and an armbrust with 5 HE rounds, only one of which is usable. Plus a ton of assorted small arms ammo, more than we could ever carry.
Got the bikes.
More than even they can carry.
Good.
Dean's Browning didn't really have much of a punch, and the boy was thinking hard about getting a second blaster, something with more power. However, the Weatherby weighed 10 pounds. He wanted something lightweight, but with maximum chilling capability.
Was hoping for more, but it should do. Everybody take an M16 M203. I'll haul the flamethrower.
Each of them took their fill of ammo for their personal weapons, filled their pockets with Grens, and draped themselves with the new blasters. Taking his share, JB then went to help Ryan with the flamethrower's straps and tap the pressure gauges to test the needles.
Should have 32 30-second bursts, Ryan. But it might only be half that since the pressure valve was sticking and we don't know if that's a true reading.
Say 15. So at short range, 45 seconds total. Good enough for the droids. Don't know about the spider, though. That last mutie fought for a long time after we set it on fire.
No prob.
Jack pulled shut the 40mm Gren launcher of the M203 and slapped a clip into the M16's receiver. Then, with a scowl, the teenager pulled the clip and primed it first by wrapping it against the wall, then sliding it into the weapon.
Nah. Triple stoop design.
Give Mama an AK-47 any day. Or an Uzi. Something more reliable.
Blast, I can't carry all of this.
We'll have to make 2 trips.
Better save the 44 bullets for Doc. Maybe we can finally get him to abandon that antique and keep the other Webley.
Hope he's okay.
Dean knew only one person was needed to guard the bikes, and with the gates closed, the parking lot should be secure. But the National Guard base was cut in 2 by the cliff, and anything could have climbed onto the mesa and caught the old man from behind.
He's fine. He is shot of trouble.
Closing her eyes, Christy tilted her head for a moment.
Curious. There it is again.
Doc?
No, that soft popcorn noise.
More gas?
I hear it too. Seems to be coming from the elevator.
We never did check that. If the soldiers sent the trash down here with the elevator, then anything could be in there.
Making popcorn?
Or maybe something walking on bubble wrap.
Droids?
Damn near anything. Triple red.
Quickly, the companions assumed positions behind the mounds of rubbish. With his Uzi in hand, JB walked to the elevator to listen for a moment, before placing a hand on the lever of the elevator door.
Open it, JB.
Grabbing the cargo elevator's handle, JB pushed up the gate, the action making the bottom half drop from sight. Inside the lift was a towering stack of wet wooden crates piled high on a plastic pallet, identical to the one used for the Bob Marley. The sides of the boxes were soaked with an oily residue that was dribbling onto the metal floor. As each drop struck, it detonated like a firecracker. The irregular sound was vaguely reminiscent of making popcorn.
Dark night. Everybody freeze.
Don't move. Don't move a goddamned muscle, or we'll be blown to hell.
Dynamite. Nuke shitting hell, that's gotta be 4 or 5 tons.
Lifting a leg, the armorer awkwardly untied his left boot and slid his foot out, then did the same with the other.
Remove your boots and walk to the stairs in your socks. Make no sudden moves. For fuck's sake, don't drop anything. Take whatever you're holding, nothing more.
But the ammo...
Leave it.
Ryan tied his bootlaces together and slung them around his neck to keep his hands free.
That old dynamite is sweating pure nitro. We gotta go, and fast.
Come again?
JB felt a trickle of sweat run down his face as he moved for the door to the stairwell.
Dynamite was just nitro and some sort of inert packing. Fuller's earth, sawdust, anything would do. But over time, the nitro can seep through the waxy covering of the sticks and ooze on the outside in droplets.
And then it explodes whenever?
Damn straight. Why the fuck it didn't detonate when I yanked open the door, I have no idea. But if it goes off now, there wouldn't be enough left of this place to stuff into a spent brass round.
Gently placing her sock-clad feet on the terrazzo floor, Mildred stared at the stack of crates on the pallet.
Anything we can do?
Leave, and then run like hell. That elevator's a bomb just itching to go off.
Easing out of their boots, the rest started slowly creeping toward the stairwell. Making a small detour around a crate, Dean reached out to snag the armbrust rocket's shoulder strap, then kept moving. Turning off the pre-burner of his weapon, Ryan scowled at the action and promised himself he would have a stern talk with the boy about obeying orders in an emergency. Crossing the few yards to the stairs seemed to take forever, every motion excruciatingly slow. But finally they were inside the stairs, their socks padding on the hard steps as they ascended at glacial speed. Finally reaching the ground floor, they risked moving faster and dashed across the damp floors, the yellowish moisture stinging their feet through the army socks.
Landing dock's closer.
Fuck that. We'd have to jump to the ground. Use the stairs.
Easing out the back door, they quickly traversed the stairs and bolted through the gate in the fence to finally reach the parking lot. Not wasting a moment with their boots, they dashed around the building in their stocking feet and raced straight for the bikes pell-mell. Standing near the bikes, Doc arched an eyebrow at the companion's unusual appearance.
Salutations all.
Shh!
What is it? Droids?
Sweaty dino. Tons of it.
Saints preserve us.
Jack climbed on the motorcycle behind Doc. Rolling to the gate, Ryan slashed the rope holding it closed with his knife, and the iron grill swung away to crash into the brick wall. The companions flinched at the noise, but when nothing happened, they rolled the bikes onto the street and drove toward the on-ramp of the bypass.
A little distance more, we'll be safe.
Sure hate to leave those blasters, but we had no choice.
None.
Things darted about in the shadows, but none dared to emerge and challenge the norms on the street. The entrance ramp proved to be clear of wrecked cars, and the motorcycles zoomed up the slipped concrete to the bypass without any trouble. Soon they were streaking away at top speed, the purrs of the engines rising to throaty growls.
Gate open! Muties wreck warehouse!
Let them. The blast will only attract more muties and give us some breathing room.
Bright light flashed behind them. Seconds later, smoking debris rained from the sky. A burning tire hit the road directly in front of them, and rolled along with the bikes for a few yards, before veering away and disappearing over the side of the elevated bypass.
Now let's go find that gateway.
Christie's army-issue socks were pressed tight to the checkered rider pegs. The woman tried not to think what would happen if her unprotected foot slipped and brushed against the rushing pavement.
Get the hell off this island.
Agreed. We'll stop at a couple of miles and look for a place to stop and check over our weapons.
And boots.
What about the spider?
Since we know where the bug is, we'll take the off-ramp just before its web. Then get back on the bypass after we go underneath.
Sounds good to me.
And if not, we got the blasters to chill a dozen of the big muties.
If these junkyard weapons work.
All of her eight legs dancing nimbly, she turned to inspect the new trap. It was perfect. A few inches off the ground was a sturdy line of her best silk that stretched across the flat river of black stone. When the two legs came back, riding their not-alive animals over the line, they would fall down and get very hurt. Maybe even break the not-animals and make the two legs drop their thundersticks. That would make them completely helpless. The tiny killers had great speed, but no agility. Then, she would swing up from under the strip of land that didn't touch the ground and pounce on them in surprise. The giant female had never done such a thing before, but her ancient instinct said the trick always worked. Soon it would have the two legs wrapped tightly in cocoons, stored food for the children when they were born.